It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And that very tiny delay you heard is because America's favorite soccer dad is again out of town pursuing victory. And where are you? Orlando, you said this time?
Yeah, Lake Mary area. Yeah. And so far, victory has been elusive, but we're still chasing.
Okay, well, keep hunting. You never know. Nice weather, probably.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And a really nice part of Florida as well.
Really, really nice
houses and beautiful. We're driving here this morning, and Justin was saying how nice the road was. It felt like we're out in the country and we're in a huge city. So
really
cool.
Well, very nice.
Yeah.
It speaks volumes for what a load of money can do.
Yeah.
Anyway, here we are again. And for those of you who are always with us, thanks so much. You know, we depend on you folks. We're well into our second half of our ninth year now. And where it goes, I cannot tell you, but I can tell you that it's going to keep going just as long as we can justify it. And all that is done because of you. So if you're new to it, try to listen the whole thing and maybe you'll just make it a habit. And I always remind people also that if you do have to miss a show, and there really aren't many good excuses to do so, but if you do have to miss one, you can always go to our website, VanWeeFinancial.com, and we will have the show on by sometime, what, Monday or Tuesday, Adam?
Yeah, it's always uploaded on Monday unless there's some reason we can't get to it. We're working Monday, so it'll be up on Monday again this week.
Yeah, a lot of people aren't. Don't go to your bank on Monday. You'll be wasting gas. It is Columbus Day, at least in those states who aren't ashamed of Columbus, like good old Florida. But people like us are open because the market's open, plain and simple. And they don't.
That's right.
Yep, they don't seem to consider this a worthy cause to close the market, and I agree with them. But I also don't like tearing down the statues and so on. But that's another story for another day. So enjoy your Monday, whether you're working or not, I say. And anyway, if you're new and you do like it, or if you go back and listen to a few, also stop in on the blogs page, because I put up a blog every week. And lately, I've been on a sort of a multi-week tear about financial planning for year end, because it may only be the 7th of October, but in financial planning terms, that's really close to the end of the year. So there are things you can do and only do between now and December, but there are also a few things you can do after the first of the year, and we'll talk about those along the way too. But the deadlines are very important if you're going to maximize your own, as we say in economics, utility, which means, to most people, minimize your taxes, but it also carries with it the implication that you can improve your future retirement. So everything's linked together, and I've got a pretty good one for today. Not sure what Adam's got going on today, but we'll discuss that too. We will have a trivia question right after the break, and a rather lengthy discussion of the jobs report and the economy and the market, because it was a really exciting week. And I think I'll just let Adam tear into it with that intro.
Yeah, I wasn't worried at all. Maybe a little worried. it really, really looked like it was going to be another down week.
It sure did.
Going into Friday early morning, the futures are up a bit, but you just knew the market was waiting on the jobs report to come out. And as soon as it came out, the futures absolutely plunged down.
That was the quickest 250 points at least that I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. And the reason for it is it's one of these strange things that we talk about pretty often. It was that the report was too good. So and in reality, it wasn't that good, but the headline number was way stronger than what was expected at 336,000 new jobs. And economists were forecasting 170,000. And on top of that, net revisions to prior months brought the total up to a gain of 455,000 new jobs. So that was digested negatively by the market, because it was a at the time, it seemed like a sure sign that the Fed was going to raise rates in November, and so everything sold off. And then somehow, mid-morning, the market figured out that maybe either it wasn't the end of the world or the report wasn't as good under the surface as it looked on top. And we actually turned into a really nice day on Friday, which rescued the week. The S&P ended up 0.5% for the week. The NASDAQ was up 1.6%, and the Dow cut into its decline, and it ended up negative, but just down 0.3%. So whether this turns into a fourth quarter rally, that's anyone's guess, but it's certainly a better start than it looked like it would be on Friday morning. And as of this morning, the market was pricing in only it's pricing in a 73% chance of no rate hike in November. So I think that number was briefly much lower on Friday morning, but it crept up on Friday afternoon, and I think that's why the market was rallying. So kind of an interesting Friday morning, a lot going on in the market right now. I want to talk a little bit about bonds. And way back in August of 2020, the long-term treasury ETF, which is TLT, and that holds 20-plus year treasury. So just standard government-issued treasury notes that are 20 years or more from coming due. It peaked in August of 2020 at an all-time high. And this is considered not specifically long treasuries, but just treasuries in general are considered the safest asset class in the world, mainly because it's backed by the taxing authority of the U.S. government. And so typically that's where people go to put their safe money or their money that they don't want to move with the market. However, on Friday morning, that ETF was down 51% from that all-time high just 3 years ago, which is astounding. Compare that to the financial crisis back in 08, and stocks fell 57%. So not quite that much, but on par with the financial crisis on the stock return side. That's insane. It's amazing that a treasury ETF can be that volatile. And if you're an investor, that represents the danger of buying fixed income ETFs versus individuals, but it also represents an opportunity, and I will talk about that right after we get through with this break, because there's going to be a time coming up where this is going to present a real opportunity.
And I don't think that time is terribly far off. I don't think I'd dive in Monday morning, but...
No, it's hard to say. The Fed's mantra is higher rates longer right now, so got to be careful.
Mm-hmm. And right now, you're not taking an inordinate amount of risk to keep them short, because we're getting between 5 and 6 on short bonds and money markets. So you can park that money for a while and use it a little later. But more on that right after we get back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have a trivia question, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Yeah, we talk a lot about retirement, and especially this time of year. So today we're dealing with retirement in the trivia question. 11% of American workers plan to retire before age 60. What percent of American workers actually retire before age 60? The whole number. And it's between 1 and 100. There. Now you have a bracket. Probably had one before if you were really thinking about it, but now you got a good one. All right. Back to a lot of topics in the market. Well, we survived the week, as Adam was saying, but it wasn't exactly a one-way street, and it was very complicated. So why don't you get into it from whatever angle you prefer, jobs or whatever?
Yeah, I wanted to talk more about buying fixed income ETFs and the dangers but the opportunities associated with them. There's a big difference between buying a treasury or a bond ETF and buying an individual bond or treasury. And that risk is really in the losing principal. So if you buy a U.S. treasury, an individual treasury, and you hold it to maturity, the risk of losing principal is as close to zero as you can have in the market, buying any kind of investment product. So right now, as you mentioned, there are short-term treasuries that you can buy that will pay you between 5 and 6%, and they'll last you about a year. You'll get some, you might get some yield out of a coupon payment, and then you'll get whatever you buy it at a discount, it will pay you the full face value at the end. So your risk of loss is really close to zero. And same goes for long-term treasuries. If you buy a 30-year treasury right now and you hold it to maturity, your risk of loss is still, it's definitely higher than a short-term treasury, but it's still pretty low. That is not true if you buy an ETF or a mutual fund that holds a basket of different fixed income products. And I think the best example of that is the one I was talking about before the break, where you have TLT, which is the long-term treasury ETF, down 51% in 3 years. That is a huge loss for a fixed income investment. So the converse of that, though, is that if interest rates start to go down in the future, which is inevitable, at some point they will come down. If it can go down 51%, you can probably figure out what would happen if the opposite were true. If interest rates came down, it can go up substantially. So buying the timing shouldn't time the market, but it's a pretty sure thing if interest rates are dropping that you're going to see fixed income ETFs start to increase in value. And the same can be true about an individual bond, but it won't be quite as dramatic, and then you have to sell before you hold it to maturity. So just some things to think about when you're constructing your portfolio. Remember that that fixed income ETF that you have can be a lot, it can be as volatile as a stock ETF under the right circumstances. So just be careful. I just thought that was a really interesting stat that said, how can a fixed income ETF that holds the safest asset in the world be down as much as the stock market in 08? Insane.
How many times in our day jobs have you heard people come in and say, well, when the market started to tank, I went real conservative and put it all in bonds?
Sometimes that's the right answer. So if you, last year, if you sold out at the beginning of the year and waited until mid-year to three-quarters of the way through the year and put it all in individual bonds short-term, that probably worked out pretty well for you. But that is such a rare, and I doubt anyone did that.
Now, most individuals don't buy individual bonds, unlike individuals who buy individual stocks and shouldn't. They don't buy individual bonds and maybe should.
That's right. So I don't think many people would have had the foresight or the crystal ball that would have told them that was the right move. Now, I'm sure that maybe someone out there did it, but that would have been really, really lucky. Normally, if you had sold out all of your stocks in January and went to all bond ETFs, you would have been down not as much as the stock market, but still double digits last year. So that wasn't the right strategy at that point. I don't think anyone could have predicted that. You would still lose less than being in an all stock portfolio, but it still would have hurt.
Yep. Agreed.
The ISM reports were also released this week, and it was another classic case of good news, bad news. The good news was that the services index was higher than forecast and showed solid growth, as it has for quite a while. If you've been following things, you know the services side of the economy is still pretty much on fire. Not quite as on fire as it was, but still pretty hot. The manufacturing report also beat its estimates, but it's still showing contraction. But it's just fairly contracting, whereas a while back, even a few months ago, it was contracting pretty solidly. It's in a solid uptrend now, and it could show expansion as early as next month based on the trend. The bad news is that the manufacturing index has shown contraction for 12 consecutive months, and that is something that has only happened just during or just after a recession since 1953. So that sounds pretty dire. But you also have to remember that most of those occurrences happened when the manufacturing sector was a lot bigger percentage of our economy. So if that side of the economy does fall into recession, it doesn't have as dramatic of an effect as it did back in the 50s and 60s and 70s. Just something to keep in mind. It wouldn't surprise me if we're in a recession or about to go into a recession, and it wouldn't surprise me if we don't. We're sort of at that tipping point, and nobody knows what will happen next or what will be the catalyst to move it one way or another. And that's why you're seeing so much volatility in the market as well.
Yeah, for months and months and months now, we've been saying that it's just impossible to get a real accurate bead on what's going on out there. For every plus, there's a minus. For every minus, there's a plus. It's just nuts.
It really is. It's the toughest economy to unpack that I've ever seen, at least in 2008. You could at least see the housing market collapsing and point to that and say, okay, that's the catalyst.
Yeah, that is
bad. Right now, you could point to inflation, but inflation has come down. And wages have gone up, and so it's not as clear-cut. I'm sure with the benefit of hindsight it will be, but today it's really hard to say what that catalyst will be.
It is indeed.
I do want to talk a little bit about jobs also, and I mentioned that the headline number beat, and it beat really strongly. But if you look at the ADP report from earlier in the week, it was really weak. It was well below expectations. And then the supply of labor is also creeping back up. That's something that was desperately needed. And wage growth has slowed way down. So it's almost to the Fed target rate, so that was the part of the report, the wage growth portion, that I think caused the market to go up on Friday. Because when you see that, and the Fed has explicitly said they're targeting a certain number for wage growth, and we're almost there. And so is another rate hike really needed if we're almost at their target? And the market may have digested that and said, no, it's not really needed.
Yeah, that is true. And there is more confirming, too. The ADP report was at 89,000, but the Bureau of Labor Statistics, where all the government numbers are produced, the same people that produced the big number, that's from the establishment survey. On the household survey, they also came up with a very similar number, 83 or 86, I can't remember which one. But I can't imagine how numbers could be any more disparate than what they are this month, which adds confusion. But there
I was showing the household survey as showing job loss.
Well, somebody said that, but I didn't see that in my numbers, so I don't know for sure.
Okay.
I heard one person on TV said that, yeah, but I didn't see it. I don't know. I'll check that when I get home. But I did find someone who can always help illuminate things. I don't know how many of you know Larry Kudlow, not personally, but through his work of decades, really, on television, radio, in the White House, and now on Fox Business. He does a weekday program at 4 o'clock, and I very frequently go back and pick up his opening remarks on it, at least, which I did last night. And much to my non-surprise, he was talking about the jobs report and how everything isn't exactly what you see on TV. And I thought it was excellent. So he pointed out a lot of very important things, like the fact that this jobs report, the big one, was not supported by any of the other reports. But the big deal was that there were 22,000 full-time jobs lost and 151,000 part-time jobs gained. Well, part-time jobs, A, don't pay much, and two, they don't really carry that kind of benefits. And then there's that other thing about a lot of people have two or three of them now. When you're measuring unemployment, if you work 1 hour a month, you are not unemployed. So you can have two jobs or three jobs or one, it doesn't matter, and you are not called unemployed. But the number of jobs is the actual number of jobs that are being paid for, and that includes every part-time job out there. So right away, you got to unpack those numbers and see exactly what's going on in order to even begin to do it. But then I'm going to tell you the real fun part right after the break. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I remind everybody the lines are open, 904-222-8255. And the question today is, although 11% of working Americans plan to retire before age 60, what percentage of working Americans actually do retire before age 60? All right, Adam has a public service announcement that we want to slip in. Then I'm going to get back to some more things on the economy and the jobless rate and sort of a fun little thing that you will only hear here. So now that I've teased it, let it rip, Adam.
All right, yeah. Real quick, I just want to talk about a fun 5K run that we're sponsoring coming up next month, November 4th. It's over in Nocatee, and it is Joe's Jog for a Cure. Joe was the son of a friend of ours who unfortunately was diagnosed with pediatric cancer, and he lost his life. And his family has set up a foundation that benefits research that's being done to try and cure that specific type of leukemia that took Joe from them. So this, all the proceeds from this run go to benefit that foundation, and we're huge supporters of them, and we hope that you can make it out on November 4th. It's in the morning. It's a great way to get some pre-calories burnt before Thanksgiving. And if you want to sign up, please go to joestrong.org.
All right, cool. All right, yesterday, after the big whopping 336,000 number was produced, Joe Biden's salivary glands started pulling their usual trick, and you just couldn't keep him away from a microphone. So he wandered out and opened his mouth and started lying. What he said was that 336,000 jobs were created in September alone, and you may think that that's an accident, but it's not. It's Bidenomics. And then he went on, and he said, here's the truth. Those big corporations that were making all kinds of money and not paying any taxes, we tax them. So here's the numbers he gave, and I know it's hard to follow numbers on the radio, but you'll get the idea by the time I wrap this up in a moment. 50 big corporations made $40 billion and weren't paying any taxes. Well, the administration taxed them. He first said 30, corrected himself to 15%, and that generated so much money that they were able to pay down the national debt by $1.7 trillion and actually wound up with a surplus. Well,
wait, what?
I am not making this up, and I couldn't, frankly. All right, let's go back to Go here. $40 billion of corporate income was taxed at 15%. That is $6 billion with nine zeros. The deficit, which he doesn't understand, that just means the current year deficit, was $2 trillion for the fiscal year that just ended. $2 trillion. That has 12 zeros. If you subtract the $6 billion from the $2 trillion, you have improved the deficit by, you ready for this? 0.003%.
And what you haven't done is touched the debt. You haven't even gotten close to touching the debt.
The debt rose by $2 trillion, and there was no surplus in anything except words coming out of his mouth. That was a word salad worthy of his second in command, but I don't even think she could have made this one up, and that's the truth. So anyway, Kudlow, if you can get Kudlow's first 10 minutes of the show from yesterday, do. Otherwise, I'm just going to tell you, he was describing the whole situation and playing clips from it, and he came up with a line that I just dearly loved. He says, Biden is a bottomless Pinocchio, incapable of telling the truth. And I thought that was just great. And whether you think it's malicious or not, or maybe he just doesn't know any better, I can't make that discussion. But how could you call yourself an advisor to the President of the United States and let a guy come out in front of God and everybody and say things like that that are so misguided, so untrue, and so damaging to anything like policy? So, okay, that's my rant for today. And you heard it here first. But can't let it go without saying another good thing happened, too, in that I finally solved the riddle of what is Bidenomics. And I'm going to give this to y'all for free because I'm such a nice guy. Ready for this one now. First time Biden said the word Bidenomics, somebody wrote it in a speech apparently, and he said, whatever that is, I have no idea. So we've gone in a year and a half from that to everything good in the world is because of Bidenomics, according to him. And the expression he's always used, even when he was running, was that you build an economy from the middle out and the bottom up. There is not a soul on God's green earth that can tell you what the hell that means. And I'm one of those that can't tell you what it means. You build an economy from the middle out and the bottom up, not the top down. Well, I personally have never gotten a job from a poor man in my life, or a poor woman for that matter. And I don't know anybody else who has either. So maybe if you give money to an unemployed, not even high school educated person, 10 more jobs will be created from that. But I somehow do not think so. But I digress. Between the escalating food prices and escalating energy prices and rising interest rates and wages that have not kept up with inflation for 3 years, there are a lot of people that are suffering more and more. I've got a couple of very scholarly articles on it. This one from Town Hall, Bidenflation has caused a drastic number of Americans to live in poverty. So the poverty percentage in the country is getting worse. So I started thinking about that middle out and bottom up thing. And I thought, yeah, you know, maybe there's something to that, because the poor people, the bottom rung, so to speak, are ever growing and they're getting worse. Who is the recipient of bad policy when it comes to taxation and inflation? Well, the lowest paid among us have to eat. They have to drive their cars, buy gasoline, raise their kids, pay their taxes, on and on and on. And they don't have the available cash after their expenses to move anywhere except down. Therefore, they're putting a lot of it on credit cards and that sort of thing. And Americans are getting themselves into a world of hurt with credit card debt. But what I figured out that Bidenflation means is that so many people in the middle get squeezed so hard that they get Dunlap's disease, you know, where something Dunlaps over your beltway, and they're getting squeezed down into the lower class. So we're getting a much broader base of lower class people than we ever had before. And that is Bidenomics. It's widening the base at the bottom, but it doesn't build anything. It barely supports what's above it. We've got to reverse the effects of Bidenflation and Bidenomics so that somebody can get in there who knows a thing or two about what goes on in real economics day to day and start loosening that belt so people can climb up back into the middle class. And every year, a few of the middle class people rise up to the upper class, the comfortable class, and so on. But it can't be done right now because there is no opportunity out there. So if that's Bidenomics, all I say is live it, breathe it, and reject it. We've got to get rid of these people. That's it. And then I have a little rhetorical question backing that up. If this administration is so union-friendly, why are there so many people going on strike and not settling? And yes, that was rhetorical. I don't need an answer from any of you. But I'll close this little segment by quoting Greg Gutfeld. You're welcome, America. That's it. You get the government you vote for. And we did. We got to survive another year, folks, and then hopefully it'll get better. All right, Adam, you got anything more to wrap up on that, or shall we dive into the next thing?
Yeah, there was a few things I wanted to mention. This is sort of along the same lines. There are several lawmakers in D.C. calling for lowering the amount of money that one has to make to be considered the rich. They want to take it from the 1% to the 5%. And that puts you solidly in the $250,000 as a couple range. And guess
what? As a couple.
In New York.
That's a policeman and a teacher.
It is. It's in New York, there are more than 168,000 local government employees making more than 127,000. So if you're married to another one, if you're a teacher and a cop, you're rich. It's unbelievable. How could that be?
I don't know, but I say we raise their tax bracket, because then we give them the keys to the local electric vehicle and drive them to the polls. And maybe they'll vote smarter this time. Who knows? It's unbelievable. In my wildest dreams, I could not make up the things I hear out of this administration. I absolutely couldn't. And I'm pretty creative when it comes to that sort of thing. So, you know, if you're one of those people in the 125 range, or two of those people, and you have no idea what they'll do to you if you get classified as rich. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And as we mentioned earlier, Adam is out of town with another one of those great connections. You know, for all the things that the world has done poorly, the communication level over the past few years that we've been doing this has really improved nicely. And that's the truth. A quick comment on those in the 250 bracket who are about to get the target put on their backs by the administration and the IRS. What happened to the $400,000 thing being rich?
Well, you know that these targets always move, and they only move in one direction.
That's true, too. And you know that there's absolutely no chance for you people making a quarter of a million to get audited, because those don't go below $400,000. You want to bet? I don't think anybody will take me on that one. This is not good, people. This is not good. There's a reason. When these happen, always consider the source. What are they after? They're after your money. And there's just no better way to put it than that. That's the truth. All right. Last week, I had gotten a little explanation from my insurance company about the future pricing for my drug insurance plan. And it looked really good. It got a decrease. So I read it, kind of like the jobs report yesterday. Read it down under the headline. And all of a sudden, my price is down, but I'm going to pay more for it. And that doesn't sit with me as being a very realistic way to do things. I'm not in control. Kind of glad I'm not in some respects, as I wouldn't want to have to answer to the public. But we got into this discussion and got into Medicare sort of inadvertently. And all of a sudden, we started getting some phone calls. And that prompted me, when I got home, Sarah and I were talking about the show when I got home. And she mentioned this week about open enrollment, thinking that it had started today, perhaps, October 7th, but it actually starts October 15th and runs to December 7th. And that's open enrollment for such things as Medicare and Medicare Advantage. And we noticed it, and I think the reason she brought it up was we've been hearing Medicare Advantage advertising. It's exploded on the airwaves lately. And man, does it sound good. You get and you get and you get, and you don't pay anymore, or you pay less, or sometimes even pay nothing. Who could turn down a deal like that? Well, a lot of people could if they'd heard the show last week, especially. Many hospitals are no longer signing up for the Medicare Advantage plan that you might be in or you might be thinking of signing up for. And if that happens, you're covered in the event of an emergency. But if that emergency is followed by getting checked into the hospital with an admission, then there's a good chance that it won't cover anything. And FYI, hospitals are very expensive these days. Or you might have to be transported, and you might really not be in a good enough condition to be transported. I want everybody to be extremely wary of the Medicare Advantage plans, the drug plans, they're part of it. It's called Medicare, see, and it rolls in A, B, and D. And remember, you have then severed your ties with the U.S. government once you do this. They farmed it out to an insurance carrier. And sometimes they're very reluctant to bring you back if you made a mistake. Although there are sometimes, for instance, people who've been on a spouse's plan that's qualified, they can sometimes get back in. But if you're just a regular old Joe Medicare recipient off the street, be very, very careful about severing your ties with the federal government. And I hate to have to say things like that, but in this case, it's absolutely critical that you understand that so you don't get yourself into long-term trouble. So, like I said, open enrollment starts next week on the 15th of October, runs through December 7th, and that's when you're allowed to change plans. Whenever the advertising starts sounding really good, just remember our old favorite, if it sounds too good to be true, comma, finish the sentence. So a little word to the wise. All right. You're in planning, Medicare planning. This is going to be one of the hardest topics I ever have to cover. But for the last month, I've been working on this. And my goal has been to help people understand that things you plan for today can help you this year and long term by saving on your taxes. And so few people understand anything about the tax system. It's very difficult. So I'm trying to break it down into little subsets of very easily understood pros so that people get an idea of what we actually do. And this is a routine that we go through with many of our clients every year. And it really got triggered a few years ago by the invention of what they call the Roth IRA conversion, where the funds in a traditional deductible IRA get moved over to a Roth IRA in a process called conversion. That is taxable as it happens, which is not always bad, depends what tax bracket you're in. But it was also so flexible, it was one of those too good to be true tax concepts, because you could do it this year and then find out after the first of the year when you start collecting all your information and totaling up your income, oh my God, I went over into a bracket I didn't want to be in. Well, no problem, because that conversion was all or fractionally able to be returned to the traditional in a process they called recharacterization. So you could find out, I forgot about this $2,000 capital gain, so I went over into my 30-whatever percent bracket, and I didn't want to be, I wanted to be in one of the lower brackets. So you just recharacterize it back, boom, no harm, no foul. Well, naturally, Uncle Sam's always there looking around to see if anything that they have, quote, given you is too good to be true, and away it went along with the goodies we received at the TCJA of 2017. That was the Trump Cuts Tax, Job Creation and Tax Act of 2017. You can't recharacterize anymore. You can still do the conversion, but once you do it, you're stuck. Well, the substitute for that second chance you used to get after the first of the year, there's only one way to substitute, and that's plan better this year for what's going to happen. And the reason that people want to do that is usually because they believe they'll be in a higher tax bracket next year. Well, what does that mean? I think, or 10 years away too, I think one of the harder concepts for people to understand is tax brackets. And I'm going to try to simplify them. A tax bracket is actually, should be called, the bracket for your marginal income. In other words, if you made one more dollar, what percentage would you pay? Most people say, well, I'm in the 22% bracket, so it'd be $22 and or 22 cents on the dollar. And we say, yes, that's true. But what they don't know is that everybody gets to max out every bracket below that prior to getting into this one. So let's say you're in a 30, let's keep it simple. Let's say your tax bracket is 30%. But it doesn't mean that you haven't gotten the benefit of the 12% or 15% brackets. You do. You've maxed it out. But there's another thing in there that's very important. The lowest two tax brackets have a capital gains rate of zero. But if you go $1 into the next tax bracket, your capital gains rate goes to 15%. That dollar can wind up costing you a fortune. That's why the planning has become even more difficult than it ever was before. So when what we do now is instead of erring a little on the high side, we try to err on the low side and get it as close as humanly possible to what's going to happen. Well, there's another thing that came in there with the TCJA. Tax brackets used to be like 25 of them or something. You'd make $2,000 more, you'd be in another one, and then you make another $1,500, you'd be in another one. They were just completely and utterly unwieldy. But over time, that's shrunken down where there are very few brackets now. But what Trump's plan did, it made those brackets what we call wider. In other words, you can make a lot more money and still be in the lowest bracket. You can make a lot more money and still be in the second bracket, and you're still qualified for zero capital gains rate. So nowadays, with people in those income brackets, we try to help them nestle right up to the end of that tax bracket, including the capital gains, and then they don't have to pay capital gains tax. Whereas if we miss it a little on the high side, oops, bang, you're in. But needless to say, it's very complicated, and thank God for Excel spreadsheets, because without it, I don't know what I would do. But this is a process that if you're in that income range, what do we figure now, for Adam, for a couple for taxable income to stay in the lower two? About 93 or something like that?
Yeah, it's a little higher than that now. I think that was last year, but it's almost $100,000 that you can potentially make. Now, it depends. There's a lot of factors that go into that, right, including what type of income it is and your what deductions you are qualified for. But it's, as a general rule for a retired couple, I use that mid-90s number.
All right. Well, next week I'm going to explain what income is. And there are many, many words to describe income for a 1040 form, and you got to know what each one means before you can even begin to understand this process. So I'll try to keep it as easy as possible, but I'm also going to try to drum it in how important it is. And the answer, while only 11% of Americans plan to retire before age 60, 33% actually do retire before age 30. That 22% has a name: involuntary retirement. Think about that and what it involves for planning. More than ever, your financial planner is your best friend. And our phone is 904-685-1505. Just a little thought for the day. I appreciate it, everybody. Thanks, and we'll see you next week, same time. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour, out.